For more information on the recording by Alicia Joseph. Five Children in the Dead by Edith Nesbitt. Chapter 10. Probably the game has been the greatest success of Stanley Malcolm reading the last weekend. The story of Brandon in the bed at breakfast, and as he took his third cup of tea, he said to me, "I wish there were bread in the rooms in England. Not big ones, you know, but little ones, just about the right size for us to fight." Everyone disagreed with him at the time, and no one attached any importance to the incident. But when they went down to the sand pit to ask for £100 and two German pieces for cleaning the toilet's pan to prevent mistakes, which they had always felt to be a really reasonable wish that must turn out well, they found out for the Sunnied, which was very cross and sleepy, said, "Oh, don't bother me. You've had your wish." "I didn't know it," said Cyril. "Don't you remember yesterday?" said the Sand Fairy, still more anticipatingly. "You asked me to let you have your wishes wherever you happen to be. And you wished this morning, and you've got it." "Oh, have we?" said Robin. "What is it?" "So you've forgotten," said the Sandy, beginning to burrow. "Never mind, you'll know soon enough. And I wish you joy of it. A nice thing you've let yourself in for." "We always do," said and now the odd thing was that no one could remember anyone's having wished for anything that morning. The wish about the Red Indians had not stuck in anyone's head. It was a most anxious morning. Everyone was trying to remember what had been wished for, and no one could, and everyone kept expecting something awful to happen every minute. It was most agitating. They knew, from what the Sandy had said, that they must have wished for something more than usually undesirable, and they spent several hours in the most agonizing uncertainty. It was not until nearly dinner time that Jane Cummings delivered the last of the movie tapes, which had, of course, been left face down on the floor. And when Anthea had picked her and the book up, she said suddenly, "I know," and sat down flat on the carpet. "Oh, pussy, how awful. It was Indians he wished for. Cyril, at breakfast, don't you remember? He said, 'I wish there were Red Indians in England.' And now there are, and they're going about scalping people all over the country, like as not." "Perhaps they're only Northumberland Durham," said Jane seriously. It was almost impossible to believe that it could really hurt people much to be scalped so far away as that. "Don't you believe it," said Anthea. "The Samoyed said we'd let ourselves in for a nice thing. That means they'll come here. And suppose they scalp the lamb?" "Perhaps the scalping would come right again at sunset," said Jane, but she did not speak so hopefully as usual. The things that go out of your wishes don't go. Look at the 15 shadows. Let's see. I'm going to break something, and you must let me have every penny of money you got. The Indians will come here, don't you see? That spiteful summit is going to say so. You see what my plan is? Come on. Jane did not see it all, but she followed her sister meekly into her mother's bedroom. And she lifted down a heavy water jar. It had gotten a pattern of storks and long grasses on it, which Cynthia never forgot. She carried it into the dressing room and carefully emptied the water out of it into the bath. Then she took the jar back into the bedroom and dropped it onto the floor. You know how a jar always breaks if you happen to drop it by accident. If you happen to drop it on purpose, it is quite different. And Thea dropped that jar 3 times, and it was unbroken forever. So at last she had to take her father's boot tree and break the jar with that cold blood. It was heartless work. Next she broke open the missionary box with the poker. Jane told her that it was wrong, of course, but Anthea shut her lips very tight and then said, "Don't be silly, it's a matter of life and death." There was not very much in the missionary box, only 7 and 4 pence. But the girls between them had nearly 4 shillings. This made over 11 shillings, as you will easily see. And Thea tied it to money in the corner of her pocket handkerchief. "Come on, Jane," she said, and ran down to the farm. She knew that the farmer was going to Rochester that afternoon. In fact, it had been arranged that he was to take the 4 children with him. They had planned this in the happy hour when they believed that they were going to get that £100 in 2 shilling pieces out of the standard. They had arranged to pay the farmers 2 shillings each for the ride. Now, Anthea hastily explained to them that they could not go. But would he take my friend and baby instead? He agreed, but he was not pleased to get only a half a crown instead of 8 shillings. Then the girls ran home again. Anthea was agitated, but not flurried. When she came to think it over afterwards, she could not help seeing that she had acted with the most far-seeing promptitude, just like a born-again general. She fetched the little box from her corner drawer and went to find Martha, who was laying the cloth, not in the best of tempers. "Look here," said Anthea, "I've broken the toilet jug in Mother's room. Just like you, always up to some mischief somewhere, dumping dead salts under the bed." "Don't be cross, Master dear," said Anthea. "I've got enough money to pay for a new one. If you'll only be a dear and go and buy it for us. Your cousins keep a china shop, don't they? And I would like you to get it today in case Mother comes home tomorrow. You know she said she might, perhaps. But you're all going into town yourself," said Martha. "But you're all going into town yourself," said We can look forward to if we get the new chair to sit down for you. But it will take for you to grow. It will take a long time. And I say, Martha, look here. I'll give you my Liberty box if you go. Look, it's most awfully pretty. All inlaid with real silver and ivory and ebony that can shine in the temple. I see, said Martha. No, I don't want your box, miss. What you want is to get the precious one off your hands for the afternoon. Don't be so sure to think that I won't see through you. This was so true that I didn't feel long to deny it at once. Martha had no business to know so much, but she had the time. Martha set down the bread with the bag that made it jump off its trencher. I do want the jug pot, you will grow, won't you? Well, just for this once, I don't mind. But mind you don't get it into none of your outrageous mischief while I'm gone, that's all. Well, just for this once, I don't mind. But mind you don't get it into none of your outrageous mischief while I'm gone, that's all. He's going earlier than he thought, you'd better hurry and get dressed. Do put on that lovely purple frock, Martha, and the hat with the pink rounded flowers and the yellow lace collar. Jaden finished laying the cloth, and I'll wash the lamb and get it ready. As she washed the unwilling lamb and hurried him into his best clothes, and see if he stayed the window from time to time. So far, all was well. She could see no red Indians. When would the rash and the scurry and some mutiny of the damask of Martha's complexion, she and the lamb had been got off, and fear drew a deep breath. He's safe, she said, and to James' horror, flung himself down on the floor and burst into a flood of tears. Jane did not understand at all how a person could be so brave and like a general, and then suddenly gave way and go flat like an air balloon in the cricket. It is better not to go flat, of course, but you will observe that when the fear did not give way to her accomplished. She had got to hear that out of danger. She felt certain the red Indians would be round the lighthouse and nowhere. The farmer's car would not come back till after sunset, so she could afford to cry a little. It was partly with joy that she cried, because she had done what she was meant to do. She cried for about 3 minutes, while Jane hugged her neighbor and said it 5 second intervals. Don't cry, Martha dear. Then she jumped up, rubbed her eyes hard with the corner of her pink hair, so that they kept red for the rest of the day, and started to tell the boys. But just at that moment, cook rang the dinner bell, and nothing could be said till they had all been helped to mince beef. Then cook left the room, and Anthea told her tale. But is it really a mistake to tell a thrilling story when people are eating minced beef and boiled potatoes? There seems somehow to be something about the food that made the idea of red Indians seem flat and unbelievable. The boys actually laughed and called on shape that she wished it would find today. It wasn't such a relief. Why, if it wasn't me and Sir Lord, salt please, and mustard must have something to make this much better. If it wasn't me, they'd have been stuffed into place long before this. You know they would. I believe it's the fine day. Then why did you send that same letter stuff in from Meg's thing? Asked Sophia. She was feeling very cross. She knew she had acted with nobility and discretion, and after that it was very hard to be called a little silly, especially when she had the weight of the burglar missionary box and about 7 4 pence mostly in coppers lying like lead on her conscience. There was a sigh of a string which Cook took away from Nancy's place and brought in the treat for pudding. As soon as she had retired, Sarah began again. Of course I don't mean to say, he admitted, that it wasn't a good thing to get Mark and the lamb out of the light for the afternoon. But as for Red Indian, why, you know jolly well the dish is always coming that very minute. There was going to be Red Indians, and he'd be here now. I expect they are, said Anthea. They're lurking near the undergrowth for anything you know. I do think the most beasts of any kind. Indians almost always do look really good, don't they? Put in Jane, anxious for peace. No, they don't, said Cyril tartly. And I'm not unkind. I'm only truthful. And I say it was utter rot, breaking the water jug. And as for the missionary box, I believe it's a treason kind. And I shouldn't wonder if you could be hanged for it, if any of us was to split. Shut up, can't you? Said Robert. But Cyril couldn't. You see, he felt in his heart that if he should be in this, it would be entirely his own fault. So he did not wish to believe in them. He tried not to believe in things when in his heart he was almost sure they were true, and it was bad for his temper if anything I know. It's simply the art, he said, talking to Red Indians. I mean, you can see for yourselves that it's James's got her wish. Look what a fine day it is. Oh! He had turned towards the window to point out the fineness of the day. The others turned too, and the frozen silence caught at Cyril, and none of the others felt at all like breaking. For there, peering around the corner of the window, among the red leaves of the broken creeper, was a face. A brown face. With a long nose and a tight mouth and very bright eyes. And the face was painted in colored patches. It had long black hair, and in the hair blue feathers. Every child's mouth in the room opened and stayed open. The treacle pudding was glowing white and cold. No one could move. Suddenly the feathered head was cautiously withdrawn, and the spell was broken. I'm sorry to say that Anthea's first words were very much a call. There now, she said, I told you so. Triple pudding had now definitely ceased to chime. Hastily wrapping their portions in the stuff table the week before last, they hid them behind the crinkled paper stuff. The only thing I can think of, said the spirit, who was now again moving to carry the day, is if we dressed up as young Indians as we can and looked out of the windows, or even went out, they might think we were the powerful leaders of a large neighboring tribe, and not to do anything to us, you know, for fear of awful vengeance. But Eliza and the cook, said Dave, you forget they can't notice anything, said Robert. They wouldn't notice anything anyway, even if they were scalped and roasted in the same fire. But would they come notice, I said? Of course. You can't be really scalped or burned to death without noticing it. And you'd be sure to notice it next day, even if it escaped your attention at the time, said Sarah. I think Andrew is right, but we shall want a most awful lot of feathers. I'll go down to the hen house, said Robert. There's one of the turkeys in there. It's not very well. I could cut its feathers and bury it with a match. It's very bad. Doesn't seem to care what happens to it. Get me the cutting out scissors. Ernest reconnoitering convinced them all that no Indians were in the poultry yard. Robert went. In 5 minutes he came back, pale but with many feathers. Look here, he said, this is jolly serious. I cut off the feathers, and when I turned to come out, there was an Indian squinting at me from under the old hen coop. I just brandished the feathers and yelled, and got away before he could get the coop off the top of himself. Panther, get the colored blankets off our heads. It looks like we can't hear you. It is wonderful how like an Indian you can make yourselves with blankets and feathers and colored scarves. Of course, none of the children happened to have long black hair, but there was a lot of black calico that had been bought to cover schoolbooks with. They cut strips of this into a sort of fine fringe and fastened it round their heads with the amber-colored ribbons off the girls' Sunday dresses. Then they stuck turkey's feathers in the ribbons. The calico looked very like long black hair, especially when the strips began to curl up a bit. But our faces, said Anastasia, they're not at all the right color. We're all rather pale, and I'm sure I don't know why. But Cyril is the color of putty. I'm not, said Cyril. The real Indians outside seem to be brownish, said Robert hastily. I think we ought to be really red. It's sort of superior to have a red skin if you are one. The red coat the cook used for the kitchen bricks seemed to be about the reddest thing in the house. The children mixed some in a saucer with milk as they had seen the cook use for the kitchen floor. Then they carefully painted each other's faces and hands with it till they were quite as red as any red Indian would be, if not better. They knew at once that they must look very terrible when they met Eliza in the passage and she screamed aloud. This unsolicited testimonial pleased them very much, four warlike attitudes in the face of prolonged death injuries. These were all about the same height, and that height was cereals. I hope to goodness they can talk English, said Cereal, thinking about it too. And Thea knew they could, but she never knew how she came to know it. She had a white towel tied to a walking stick. This was a flag of truce, and she waved it in hope that the Indians would know what it was. Apparently they did, for one who looked down maybe never stepped forward. "You see the powwow," he said in excellent English. "I'm Golden Eagle of the mighty tribe of rock dwellers." "And I," said Anthea, with a sudden inspiration, "am the Black Panther, chief of the Muzawati tribe. My brothers, I don't mean, yes, I do, the tribe, I mean the Muzawatis, are in ambush below the brow of yonder hill." "And what mighty warriors be these?" asked Golden Eagle, turning to the others. Cereal said he was the great chief squirrel of the Monongahela tribe, and seeing that James stuck in his thumb became evident to think none of herself, he added, "This great warrior is Wildcat, Pussy from Rocks, we call it in this land, leader of the vast Fitizi tribe." "And thou, valorous red-skinned Golden Eagle," inquired suddenly Robert, who, taken unawares, could only reply that he was Dobbs, leader of the Cape Mountain Police. "And now," said Black Panther, "our tribes, if we just whistle them up, will far outnumber your puny forces, so resistance is useless. Return, therefore, to your own land, old brother, and smoke pipes of peace and wampums with your squaws and your medicine men, and dress yourselves in your gayest wigwams and eat happily with your juicy, fresh cotton moccasins." "You've got it all wrong," murmured Cereal angrily, but Golden Eagle only looked inquiringly at her. "Thy customs are other than ours, O Black Panther," he said. "Bring up thy tribe that we may hold powwow in state before thee, as becomes great chiefs." "We'll bring them up right enough," said Anthea, "with their bows and arrows and tomahawks and scalps and knives and everything you can think of, if you don't look sharp and go." She spoke bravely enough, but the hearts of all the children were beating furiously, and their breath came in shorter and shorter gasps, for the little real red Indians were closing up around him, coming nearer and nearer with angry murmurs, so that they were the center of a crowd of dark, cruel faces. "It's no gold," whispered Robert. "I knew it wouldn't be. We must make a bowl for the sandweed. It might help us. If it doesn't, well, I suppose we shall come alive again at sunset. I wonder if scalping hurts as much as they say." "I'll wave the flag again," said Anthea. "If they stand back, we'll run for it." She waved the towel, and the chief commanded his followers to stand back. Then, charging wildly at a place where the line of Indians was thinnest, the four children yellow ego and his followers cannot be confessed at the very spot where they attain sanity and understanding. Breathless and beaten, the wretched children now awaited their fate. Sharp knives and axes gleamed around them, but worse than these was the cruel light and red burning within his followers. "You have lied to us all, Black Panther," snapped the Watties, "and thou too, Squirrel King of Moon Combos." These also precede the rocks of the Fatigue and Bobs of the Cape Mounted Police. These also have lied to us, if not with their tongue, yet by their silence. Ye have lied under the cover of the truce flag of the Red Face. Ye have no followers. Your tribes are far away, following the hunting trail. What shall ye dare do? He concluded, turning a bitter smile to the other Red Indians. "Build me the fire," shouted his followers, and at once a dozen ready volunteers started to work the fuel. The four children each held between two strong Red Indians cast a staring glance around them. Oh, if they could only see this need. "Do you mean to scalp us first and then roast us?" asked Antigua desperately. "Of course," Redskin openly replied. "It's always done." The Indians had formed a ring around the children and now sat on the ground gazing at their captives in threatening silence. Then slowly, by twos and threes, the Indians who had gone to look for fire came back, and they came back empty-handed. They had not been able to find a single stick of wood for a fire. "No one ever can," was the matter of fact, in that part of the tent. The children drew a deep breath of relief, but of any living more of terror, for bright knives were being brandished all about them. Next morning, each child was seized by a Indian. Each closed its eyes and tried not to scream. They waited for the sharp agony of the knife. It did not come. Next moment, they were released and fell in a trembling heap. Their heads did not hurt at all. They only felt strangely cool. Wild war whoops rang in their ears. When they ventured to open their eyes, they saw four of their foes dancing around them with wild leaps and screams, and each of the four brandished in his hand a scalp of long, flowing black hair. They put their hands to their heads. Their own scalps were safe. The poor, untutored savages had indeed scalped the children, but they had only, so to speak, scalped them with the black calico ringlets. The children fell into each other's arms, sobbing and laughing. "Their scalps are ours," chanted the chief, "ill-rooted with their ill-fated hairs. They came off in the hands of the victors, without struggle, without resistance. They yielded their scalps to the conquering rock dwellers. Oh, how little a thing the scalps have lightly done. They'll take their real ones in a minute. You see if they don't," said Robert, trying to There are other torments than the scalp in life and the flames. Yet is the slow fire the correct thing? O strange, unnatural country where the man might find no wood to burn to bend you. Ah, for the boundless forests of my native land, where the great trees for thousands of miles grow such a strange firewood, where we fall to burn our fires. Ah, would we were but in our native forest once more. Suddenly, like a flash of lightning, the golden gravel shone all around the four children instead of the dusky figures. For every single Indian had vanished on the instant at the leader's word. The Sami must have been there all the time, and it had given the Indian chief his wish. Martha Brahmanija was a pattern of storks and long grasses. Also, she brought back all land fields money. My cousin, she gave me the jug for luck. She said it was an odd one of what the babe needs, but she got smashed. Oh, Martha, you are a dear, said the strange giggled Martha. You'd better make the most of me while you've got me. I shall give your ma notice directly minute she comes back. Oh, Martha, we haven't been so very horrid to you, have we? Asked Cynthia aghast. Oh, it ain't that, Miss Martha giggled more than ever. I'm not going to be married. It's Theo, the gamekeeper. He's been proposing to me off and on ever since you come home from the clergyman's, where you got locked up on the church tower. And today, I said the word and made him a happy man. And Theo put the seven gold pieces back in the machine box and pasted paper over the place where the post. She was very